I want to welcome those who are watching online, and if you're joining us on local television, this is the second of three services at Emmanuel on Sunday morning. We call it the Bridge Service. We've already enjoyed a time of worship. If you have a Bible at home or here in the room, I've tried to say hello to as many of you as possible. I know we have a few guests that are with us. Welcome to Emmanuel. Take your Bible and open to Daniel chapter 1. Now, if you don't have a Bible with you, let me encourage you to bring one next Sunday. And if you need a Bible, we would be more than happy to purchase one for you. But I think it will be incumbent upon each of us to have a Bible in front of us as we go through the book of Daniel over the next 12 to 13 weeks. This morning, we're only going to give an overview of the book, but I want you to be able to become familiar with where the book is in your Bible, and then I want to challenge you to begin reading Daniel. This week, just start with Daniel chapter 1. It's not a long chapter. We'll look at it verse by verse next Sunday. Maybe during your quiet time, focus on Daniel. In the evening, when you get home from work, sit down in your easy chair or in your garden in the backyard when it's cool. Get you your favorite cup of coffee and just read Daniel 1, because it will be to your advantage to be familiar with this book. Now, my job this morning is to kind of get you prepared for what you'll be hearing over the next 3 months. I want to first begin by sharing with you why it's important for you to know Daniel, for you to be very familiar with this book. It will help you personally. It'll help your family. It'll help the way you think about this world. Let me illustrate. My wife and I were eating lunch with a young couple this past week, and we were talking about what's going on around the world. And the subject of China came up. And the young man told me that he read just about everything that I've written on China. But he was confused. He said to me that he had a friend at work who was Chinese. He went by Matt. And Matt's parents moved from China to the United States. But recently, because they didn't like the United States of America, they moved back to China. And this young man said to me, "You know, I don't understand how you can write so strongly against the government of China." And I said, I called him by name. I said, "Well, I want you to do me a favor. Next time you talk to Matt, I want you to ask him one question. What do your parents think of the CCP?" And the young man said to me, "What's the CCP? And then I realized, we've raised up an entire generation that no longer understands the world. In fact, I'll give you an indication of how I know this. Did you know that from the founding of Harvard until the late 1800s, you could not enter the university, any university in the Ivy League, without answering questions like this? What are the first four kingdoms of the world? Who were the kings of those kingdoms?" Now, you had to answer that before you got into college. And then you would study more what is called Western civilization. We've got a generation who has not only not been taught Western civilization, they don't even know what the world's first four kingdoms are. Well, Daniel addresses these kingdoms, calls them by name. From Assyria, you have Babylon. Then you have Persia, then Greece, then Rome. And during the days of Rome, Jesus is born. It was assumed in the 1800s that every American would know that. But now we've got Christians who don't even know that. And so I said to this young man, I explained to him that the CCP is the Chinese Communist Party. The Chinese people are absolutely stunning. They're beautiful people. They have a rich heritage. But the communist government is killing people by the millions. This young man said to me, you know, I just don't think we Christians should be involved in politics. And I looked at him and I said, I brought up Daniel. I said, how can you say that when one of the greatest figures in the Old Testament was in the center of the king's court doing everything he could to affect the decisions and direction of a pagan nation? How can you say that of Christians today when a man of God, Daniel, was used by the Lord in a pagan nation to direct world events? He said, well, good point. I'll have to think about that. One of the reasons we should study Daniel is because it will show us how we Christians should relate to our world. Second, did you know that Daniel himself read the writings of Isaiah and Jeremiah? In fact, he quotes from those two prophets. Jeremiah was a contemporary of his, meaning Jeremiah lived the same time Daniel did. Isaiah lived about 150 years before Daniel. Daniel knew their writings, and he quoted them. I'm going to throw something out at you. Did you know that Jeremiah and Isaiah both wrote about a pandemic that came to the nation of Assyria to humble the proud people of Assyria? That's right. I call it the pandemic of the pompous. The Assyrians were trusting in their swords and their shields. They had turned away from God. Just 40 years earlier, Jonah had gone to the capital of Assyria. You know Jonah, the story of the man swallowed by the fish. Jonah had gone to Nineveh, the capital of Assyria, and the entire nation had repented and begun to worship Yahweh, the God of Israel, whom we call the Lord, the creator of the universe. But within a generation, they turned from God, they redefined right and wrong, and they began trusting in themselves. And so God sent a pandemic. In fact, it's called a wasting disease. And 185,000 Assyrians died. Soldiers. You say, well, what does that have to do with us? I'll tell you what it has to do with us. Anytime throughout history, the Lord sees a nation that becomes pompous and proud, redefines right and wrong, turns away from Him, and takes trust in their own power and might, the Lord has a way of allowing a wasting disease to humble the proud. You say, now, Pastor, come on. Are you saying everyone who gets COVID is proud? No, that's not what I'm saying. I've had COVID twice. You've had COVID. What I'm saying is this. If you don't understand even a national pandemic in light of the way Daniel understood it, Isaiah understood it, Jeremiah understood it, then you will be confused, full of fear. You'll be living in darkness because you don't understand that the kingdom of Jesus Christ reigns today, and that any nation who turns from the Lord will be humbled. This is the message of Daniel. Before I show you a little bit more about the man and walk you through the handouts that you've received, I want to show you a short little video clip. Now, kids, at Oklahoma Bible Academy, you will see video clips like this in Bible class. And I realize that sometimes you'll check out. You'll say, oh, that's just boring stuff. Don't check out. Watch this video. It's written by a couple of guys. They're called the Bible Guys. What they do, they put on the internet free of charge. We have two people in our church, Jordan and Jessica Brown, delightful young couple. They're working with our youth. They worked with the Bible guys in putting these videos together. This video will give you an overview of Daniel from beginning to end and will show you how the Lord will always humble proud people who become like beasts in the way they live. Watch this video, then we'll come back to our notes.
The book of Daniel. The story is set right after Babylon's first attack on Jerusalem, and they had plundered the city and its temple and taken a wave of Israelites into exile. Among them were four men from the royal family of David: Daniel, who's later named Belteshazzar, and his three friends, who you probably know by their Babylonian names, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. This book tells of their struggles to maintain hope in the land of their conquerors. The book's design seems pretty simple at first. Chapters 1 through 6 contain stories about Daniel and his friends in Babylon, while chapters 7 through 12 contain the visions of Daniel about the future. But this two-part shape is made even more interesting by another design feature, and that's the book's language. It begins in Hebrew, the language of the Israelites, but chapters 2 through 7 are written in Aramaic, a cousin language to Hebrew spoken widely among the ancient empires. But then in chapters 8 through 12, it goes back to Hebrew. This design shows how chapters 2 through 7 are a coherent section, but it also highlights the importance of chapters 2 and 7 for understanding the later chapters of the book. Let's just dive in. Chapter 1 introduces the basic tension of the first half of the book. Daniel and his friends, they're really wise and capable, and they're recruited to serve in the royal palace of Babylon. But they're pressured to give up their Jewish identity by living and eating like Babylonians and violating the Jewish food laws found in the Torah. So they refuse, and they choose faithfulness to the Torah, and it puts them in danger. But God delivers them, and they end up being elevated by the king of Babylon. After this begins the Aramaic section, which you'll see has this really cool symmetrical design. So first, the king of Babylon has a dream that, it turns out, only Daniel is able to interpret. It's about a huge statue made of four types of metal, and it symbolizes a sequence of kingdoms, and the head is Babylon. But then a huge rock comes flying in, and it shatters the statue, and it becomes this huge mountain. Now, this dream is the first of many symbolic visions in the book, and this one introduces the basic storyline of them all. Daniel says that the statue represents a train of human kingdoms following from Babylon, and they will all fill God's world with violence. But one day, God's kingdom will come and will confront and humble the arrogant kingdoms of this world and fill the world with the healing justice of God's reign and rule. After this, chapter 3 tells the famous story of Daniel's three friends who refuse to bow down and worship a huge idol statue, which, like the statue in chapter 2, represents the king and his imperial power. And so the friends are persecuted. They're thrown into a fiery furnace, but God delivers them from death, and they're exalted by the king, who now acknowledges their God as the true one. After this come a pair of stories about two Babylonian kings, the father, Nebuchadnezzar, and then his son, Belshazzar. They're both filled with pride because of their imperial power. And so, like in chapter 2, God warns them both through dreams and then visions, which, also like chapter 2, only Daniel can interpret. He says that both kings are to humble themselves before God, and both kings arrogantly resist. So Nebuchadnezzar is stricken with madness. He becomes like a beast in the field. But then he humbles himself before God, and his humanity returns to him. He's restored as king. This is in contrast with his son, Belshazzar, who doesn't humble himself before God, and he's assassinated that very night. Now, these two stories draw this imagery from Genesis chapters 1 and 2 and Psalm 8, where humans are depicted as the royal image of God. He's given them authority to rule over the beasts of the field and the birds of the air on behalf of God, who is the world's true king. But when human kingdoms forget that, when they rebel and make themselves and their power into a god, they become less than human, like violent beasts who will face God's justice. Which brings us to chapter 6, the pair of chapter 3. And this time it's Daniel who's being persecuted because he refuses to pray and worship the king as a god. And so, like the friends, he's sentenced to death and he's thrown into a lion's den. But God delivers him from the beasts, and like the friends, the king exalts Daniel and praises his God. Which brings us to chapter 7. It's the pair of chapter 2 and the center of the book where all its themes come together. It's another dream, but it's Daniel's this time. And ironically, he can't understand the dream until an angelic messenger explains it to him. He sees a series of four beasts, one like a lion, then like a bear, then one like a winged leopard, each of these symbolizing an arrogant kingdom. And last of all is a super beast, identified as a really evil empire, and it has lots of horns, a common symbol for kings in the Old Testament. And there's one specific horn who is an image of an arrogant king who exalts himself above God and persecutes God's people. Now, they are symbolized by a figure called the Son of Man, who's an image for both God's covenant people, but also for their king from the line of David. But then all of a sudden, God, who's called the Ancient of Days, comes and he sets up his throne. He destroys the super beast and he exalts the Son of Man on the clouds, where he comes up to sit at God's right hand and share in God's rule over the nations. We can look back now and see how all of these stories in the first half fit together. The three stories of faithfulness despite persecution, these are meant to offer hope to God's suffering people among the nations. But they suffer because human kingdoms have rebelled against God and have become beasts. And so these visions encourage patience, that God's people are to wait for him to bring his kingdom and rule over our world and vindicate his suffering people. But it raises the question about when God is going to do that, and that's what these final three visions set out to explore. In chapter 8, Daniel has another vision about the final two beasts of chapter 7, but this time they're symbolized by a ram, who we're told is an image of the empire of the Medes and Persians, and then by a goat, who's an image of ancient Greece. And out of the goat come a whole bunch of horns, one of which symbolizes the evil king from chapter 7. And we're told more about him, that he will attack Jerusalem and exalt himself above God and defile the temple with idols. However, in the end, he will be destroyed by God, who will exalt his people and his kingdom. Now, by chapter 9, Daniel is very puzzled, especially as to when all of this is going to take place. And so he consults the scroll of the prophet Jeremiah, where God said that Israel's exile would only last 70 years. So for Daniel, the 70 years is almost up. And so he asks God to fulfill his promise soon. But an angel comes and informs him that Israel's sin and rebellion has continued. And so their time of exile and oppression will continue on seven times longer than Jeremiah envisioned. Daniel is deeply disturbed by this, and he has one final vision. We're shown the same sequence of kingdoms. It's Persia, then Greece, and Alexander the Great, followed by lesser kings, all leading up to this final king of the north, who will invade Jerusalem, set up idols in the temple, and exalt himself above God. But then, all of a sudden, this king comes to ruin. Now, there's been endless debate about what all of these visions refer to. Many see a clear connection to the exploits of the Syrian king Antiochus in the 160s BC. He killed many faithful Jews in Jerusalem and set up idols in the temple. Others think it points forward to the Roman Empire's role in the execution of Jesus and the destruction of Jerusalem and the temple in AD 70. And still others think it will be fulfilled in future events that have yet to happen when Jesus will return. Now, the problem is that the symbols and the numbers, they don't quite match any of these views perfectly. But it opens up the possibility that, in a sense, they are all right. The book of Daniel has been designed to offer hope to all future generations of God's people. It did so in the days of Antiochus's empire, and it has ever since. This is why Jesus could use imagery from Daniel to describe and confront the oppressive leaders he confronted in Jerusalem. This is why John, the visionary who wrote the Revelation, could adapt Daniel's visions and apply them to Rome of his day and also all future oppressive empires. And so the point of Daniel is that all generations of readers can find here a pattern and a promise. It's a pattern that human beings and their kingdoms become violent beasts when they glorify their own power, when they redefine right and wrong, and don't acknowledge God as their true king. But Daniel also holds out a promise that one day God will confront the beast. He will rescue his world and his people by bringing his kingdom over all nations. And so for every generation, this book speaks a message of hope that should motivate faithfulness. And that's what the book of Daniel is all about.
For the next 12 weeks, we'll be going chapter by chapter through this book. And if you think it's only about the future, the return of Christ, I want to show you it's about today. The kingdom of Christ reigns now. And I want you to come away from this series with some encouragement. I'll give you an illustration before we look at Daniel the man. I believe that China will be invading Taiwan within the next few weeks or months. I know beyond a shadow of a doubt that the CCP, not the Chinese people, the Chinese Communist government, has the goal of world dominion. They are beasts. They reject God. They are atheists. They believe in their own power, and America stands in their way. Now, when people hear me write about this, Zhao Dan from our church, who is from China, she's right there with me. When people read what I write, they're like, well, wait a minute then. Wait, are you scared? Answer, no, because I've read Daniel. This is nothing new. This kind of thing, beasts controlling the world, has happened from the beginning of time. But in the end, they will never win. Let me show you what I mean. Daniel the man, who is he? Well, the story of Daniel begins when he's 20 years old. Now, this photo shows him in his 70s. But Daniel, in Daniel chapter 1, is 20. And in the year 605 BC, 600 years before the birth of Christ, this young man, who spends the rest of his life in Babylon, is captured by Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, and taken to Babel. You say, where is that? Are you ready for this? It's a rock. It's not far from Kabul. Babylon in the Bible is what we call Iraq today. And by the way, beasts have taken over the airport in Iraq. ISIS. ISIS. Those fighters in Syria and Iraq who are attempting to kill anybody who rejects their power and their control. Things never change. Those who don't know history are destined to repeat it. The great empires of this world, the first one was Assyria. You say, what's an empire? An empire is a country that conquers other countries and leaves vassal kings there and demands that the people who've been conquered pay taxes to the king that conquered them. That's the kingdom. The world's first was Assyria. Babel, or Babylon, was the second. You see here, in 605 BC, Babylon, Iraq, Iran, went north and then descended south. And in 605, they captured Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and took them back to Babylon. The king of Babylon, Nebuchadnezzar, came back a second time to Jerusalem in 597, and he captured artisans, people who could help build the walls of Babylon and the roads. And then he came back a third time in 586, when Daniel was 39 years old and had lived in the king's court in Babylon for 19 years. Nebuchadnezzar came back a third time and destroyed the temple of Yahweh in Jerusalem, the city of Jerusalem, destroyed it all, took it to the ground, and captured all of the Jewish people and took them to Iraq, to Babylon, into what we call the Babylonian exile, which lasted for 70 years. Daniel got there before the violence had really gotten bad. You see, the reason Daniel was taken first is that he was a young noble of the Jewish king. He was a prince, along with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. In fact, we will see that he was related to the last king of Judah, Zedekiah. In 586, let me tell you what happened to Zedekiah, the king of God's people, the king of Jerusalem and Judah. Nebuchadnezzar came, as I said, for the third and final time and destroyed the city. Zedekiah saw what was coming, so he attempted to escape with his boys. He crossed through the wall with his young sons, but he's captured by Nebuchadnezzar's troops. You can read about this in 2 Kings. Zedekiah, after being captured, is brought before wicked King Nebuchadnezzar. And Nebuchadnezzar orders that all of his sons be killed in front of him. And so one by one, from the oldest to the youngest being 5 years of age, Zedekiah's boys are murdered in front of him. And then Nebuchadnezzar takes a tool and he gouges out the eyes of Zedekiah, king of Judah. They put him in chains and they drag him off to Babylon. Now, why do I tell you that gruesome story? Because kids, listen to me. If all you ever do is play your iPad and your video games, if all you ever do is lay your head on a soft, cushy pillow, and you say you follow Jesus, and you are not prepared for the fact there may come a day when you have to make a decision whether or not to bow your knee to a pagan king or to continue following the creator of the universe, if you don't make that decision before the violence comes, you will not know what to do. It is not always easy to follow the Lord Jesus Christ. Zedekiah lost his family, was taken into captivity. You say, oh my goodness. I don't like talk like this. I understand. The world doesn't like talk like this. That's because the world has lost all sight of allegiance to the King of Kings and Lord of Lords, and nations are beginning to trust in their own power. Make your decision right now. Who are you going to follow? What will it cost you? Let's go on. Daniel, we'll see next Sunday, when he first arrives in Babylon, he discovers that he can interpret dreams. Now, one of the reasons I believe the Holy Spirit gave him the ability to interpret Nebuchadnezzar's dreams is because in this first chapter that we'll be reading, the king asks all of the princes that he's captured from all the countries that he's conquered to eat his meat, drink his wine, and worship his gods. And Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego say, no, we're not going to do it. No, we're not going to do it. We're going to follow the Torah, the dietary laws of Judah. We're going to be obedient to Yahweh, our King. And we will do what he has called us to do, the King of Kings, not the King of Babylon. Well, they were threatened with death, but they remained consistent in their obedience to the Lord. And the Lord then gave favor to Nebuchadnezzar of Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And they were elevated in the king's court. And then Daniel was able to interpret dreams that the king had. And we'll see this in Daniel 2. But my point is simply this. Even though it may cost you to follow Jesus Christ in this day, hang on, even Zedekiah, blind Zedekiah, was used by God in Babylon to bring the people of God to repentance. Daniel was used by God in the king's court. All of these Christians who say, man, let's not talk about politics. Let's not talk about getting the ear of the people in charge. Let's not talk about what's going on in our country. Let's just focus on the Lord. I say to you, what are you reading? Are you reading the Bible? You've got Daniel in the middle of a pagan nation who is saying to the king, under threat of death, I will not do what you are commanding me to do. And of course, we'll see that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego are thrown into the fiery furnace. We'll see later that Daniel is thrown into the lion's den. I say to you, if we don't speak up when our nation does things, redefines right and wrong, rejects any concept of God, the Creator, and calls on us to trust in it, if we don't speak up and speak out, we will not be courageous men and women like Daniel was in his day. It's time for us to speak up here in America. For 70 years, Daniel stayed in Babylon from 605 until he died in 535. I will show you later on in this book that the Jews were released from Babylonian captivity when Cyrus, the king of the Persians, conquered the city of Babel. Cyrus, the great general that Alexander the Great modeled his career after, that at West Point, today you study the tactics of Cyrus. Cyrus diverted the Euphrates River and his army walked underneath the walls, the great walls of Babylon. And that very night, we'll read about it in Daniel chapter 5. Belshazzar, the wicked king, was assassinated by the Persian soldiers. Then Cyrus called on the Jews to go back home, but Daniel stayed. You know what Daniel did in Babylon? He didn't go back to Jerusalem. He founded a school of wisdom, and he got young men to come into this school, and he taught them the principles of Yahweh. He taught them the scroll of Isaiah and Jeremiah and his own scroll, the scroll of Daniel. And you know what he taught these magi? That there was coming a king, And he told them when he would come, because we'll see in Daniel 9 when the King of Kings was to come. He told them the exact date. That's why when Yeshua was born in Bethlehem, there came wise men, magi from the east. Where? Babylon. From Babylon, from the school of Daniel, asking the question, where is he who has been born King of the Jews? This is all a result of Daniel in Babylon. One of the things that we'll see, both from Nebuchadnezzar and Cyrus, is that these kings were influenced by Daniel. We see the witness of God in the pagan's palace, and I would say to our city councilmen, to those who are sitting on the library board, to those of you who are thinking about running for state office, be a Daniel. Stand for what is right. Daniel's message is an important one. Through our study of Daniel, we will see that the kingdom of Christ reigns over all nations. Not that it will reign. It now reigns. Those nations that rise up as beasts, God will humble. And those humble men and women who rise up to speak truth, God will exalt. You may not know the nations of Daniel, but by the time we get done, you'll become very familiar with them. He lived during the days of the Babylonian Empire. They were conquered by Cyrus and the Persian Empire. The Persians were conquered by Alexander the Great and the Grecian Empire. And the Grecian Empire was conquered by the Romans. And in that day, the Messiah came. The King of Kings now reigns. And everything that happens in this world, don't you dare despair. The rock from heaven has come. He is crushing the kingdoms of this world. How? With military might? Oh, no. Oh, no. He is humbling the nations so that those who humbly follow him might be exalted. Don't you dare trust in the United States government. Don't you dare trust in the CCP. Don't you dare trust in the European Union. Put your trust in the King of Kings and Lord of Lords. The Lord humbles the proud, but he exalts his people. I know some of you have seen the drama on Facebook. People are coming after me. I'm a bigot. I'm full of hate. I'm a white supremacist. I'm like, are you kidding me? I am a Christ supremacist. He is king. Follow him. And here's the deal. You may be thrown into the lion's den, and all the people at the opening will be shouting at you. Who are you, you idiot? You stupid man. Let your life be lost. How dare you stand against what society and civilization says is true? Be Daniel. Stand in that lion's den and speak the truth. We find that this book of Daniel is simply the unfolding of his story. Whose story? The King of Kings and Lord of Lords. History is his story. And what the devil is doing. By the way, our enemy is not flesh and blood. It's not even the CCP, the people who rule it. Winston Churchill said, you cannot make peace with dictators. You must destroy them. Winston Churchill was probably right. But we understand that behind every beast is an evil principality that has already been crushed by the King of Kings and Lord of Lords. We may not see it play out in our lifetimes, but we know the kingdom commenced at the coming of Yeshua. It continues while he reigns over the nations, making all of his enemies his footstool, Hebrews chapter 2. And it will be consummated when he comes again. So my challenge to you is this. Have the courage to go counter the culture. Have the courage to do what you know is right.
They may redefine it, but you will not give obeisance to it. You will follow the King of Kings and Lord of Lords. This is the message of Daniel. And by Thanksgiving, if you're not motivated to take your stand for Christ in a world that is filled with darkness, then you're beyond hope, because Daniel will motivate you by the Spirit of God to be bold for the King.